Support for WGTD's morning show comes from the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenosians who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional morning show co-host. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD HD. I'm Gregory Berg.
I have a feeling a lot of you know what that music is. It is from one of the most delightful and interesting and groundbreaking Broadway musicals of recent years, Spamalot, springing from the collective genius of the folks of Monty Python. And Spamalot is about to open at the Racine Theater Guild. And we're actually recording this interview on Tuesday night after a long, hardworking rehearsal at the Theater Guild. And joining me for this portion of the morning show is Doug Instanis, who is the managing artistic director, is that what we call you?
That's what we call you.
At the Theater Guild. And two of the leads in this really stunning cast for Spamalot, Dan Martino, who is King Arthur, and Ashley Mulder, who is the Lady of the Lake. So I appreciate, after a long, taxing rehearsal, you taking a few moments to talk on the morning show.
So, very welcome.
Welcome to everybody. So, Doug Instanis, maybe say a word about what led the Theater Guild to choose Spamalot and what your thoughts have been before rehearsals began.
Well, it was a play that we've considered for a few years on the play reading committee, but it was never released to community theaters because it was touring around Broadway. And so when it became released, it was like, you know what? It'd be fun to do something that nobody else in the area has done for the first time, and it's a great show, and it's a great show because the music is so clever, and you know, I wasn't a big Monty Python fan to start with, but I'm a theater fan, and they use all these theater jokes, and you know, Ashley has a wonderful song about whatever happened to my part, or here's the song that goes like this. In every show, there's a song that goes like this, so it is extremely clever, and I fell in love with the music years ago, and I was very excited when it became released for community theaters, and we brought it up to the play reading committee, and we have a lot of talented guys, and we thought we could do it well. So there's a lot of things that went into it. Mostly, it's a lot of fun, and we think the audience will like it.
I don't know if I should mention this or not, but I'm going to, just because I think it says a lot about this show and how much people want to be in it. I'm pretty sure you and I and all the shows we've done here at the Theater Guild, this is the first time we've done a major musical, and every single person accepted the role that they were given.
That is true, absolutely.
Whether it was, you know, whatever lead role it was or a place in the ensemble, every single person wanted to be in Spamalot, and that just never happens.
No, it's always something for someone, but I think people knew the play when they started. They came to auditions because they love Monty Python.
So let's find out from the two actors that are joining us what your acquaintance was with this going in. Dan Martino, who's King Arthur, I already know from rehearsing with you that I kind of know the answer to the question, but tell our listeners how much you knew this show, knew of it or knew it or both.
Well, originally it was more the 1975 movie, which is the 40th anniversary this year of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which Spamalot is based on. I was very young when I was introduced to this comedy, and I absolutely fell in love with it then. And then in 2005, I believe they did it on Broadway with this amazing cast, and Eric Idle, one of the members of Monty Python, wrote all this new music for it, and I just fell in love with, much like Doug, the music just really captures you, and the actors who did the original Broadway production sang it so well. And there's a lot of timing involved with all of these songs, with the technical aspect, and it was just, it presented a very big challenge to me, and I think to anybody who it was in the cast. It's a large challenge. Mm.
Ashley, what about you? What was your acquaintance with Spamalot before auditions and so on?
Yeah, I heard it when it came out in 2005. I had never, I'd heard of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I had never seen it. But I heard the musical and heard Sarah Ramirez sing Lady of the Lake and was in love from day one. I forced my voice teacher in college to allow me to sing the Diva's Lament, the song Doug mentioned, Whatever Happened to My Part, and had a blast singing it and knew that one day I really wanted to play Lady of the Lake, so this is a dream.
Great. So, Doug, I'll entrust you with a tricky assignment, which is to try to explain the plot for the sake of, because there's certainly going to be listeners who maybe are not aficionados of Monty Python at all, never seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and we're kind of tossing off all kinds of references that might not mean anything to some of our listeners, but it's not a plot easily summarized.
Well, I think the long and the short of it is, if you're familiar with King Arthur's quest to find the Holy Grail, so that's what it's loosely based on. King Arthur is with his servant Patsy. They travel by coconut. They click coconuts together, and that's supposed to be a horse, so that's an ongoing gag that they use in the show. Well, he's going through the countryside trying to find people to join him in his quest to find the Holy Grail. So he needs knights, knights to join the Knights of the Round Table, and he runs into all these bizarre people. They join him, and they go from countryside to countryside looking for the Holy Grail. They meet, they have an encounter with God, and God talks to them about their quest. They run into the Knights of Ni, which is a group of forest-dwelling knights that are rather bizarre and crazy, and they to get them to pass certain bridges or through their countryside, they have to do certain tasks. They run into a black knight who stops them from going through a certain area, and we have to do this little comic battle. If you're familiar with the movie, you know what happens with the black knight. He is able to fight without arms or legs, and so that has its own little challenges. And what's particularly different about the play is that there isn't a Lady of the Lake in the play, but they decided they needed a female in the play. So they added this great role for the Lady of the Lake to help Arthur along his travels. So she comes out of the lake and gives a little advice to everybody, and but then she gets mad because her part's not big enough. So she has this whole song about whatever happened to my part, and so anyway, the long and the story is they meet these crazy people. They have a killer rabbit that they run into that they have to vanquish, which is a very comedic scene. Tim, the enchanter, gives them advice. And so, one of the advices, advice that they get is that they can't succeed on Broadway if they don't have any Jews. And so one of the goals was to put on a Broadway show. That was one of the things that the Knights of Ni tell them that they have to do. So there's a big Broadway number. So anyway, it's long and the short of it is they find the Grail. It's a big love story. Everybody gets married and lives happily ever after, except for the guy that gets killed by the killer rabbit.
Do I remember that you have been in Spamalot before?
No.
So how did you, because I remember hearing you do the song you just referenced on fundraiser. So
right.
You just knew that song from...
Yeah, it was one of the songs that I liked in the show. And, one of the things that you and I joke about at auditions is sometimes people pick songs that have three notes in them, and that sometimes you have to range them vocally to find out what their range is. So I can do a song with three notes. So that's the song that I picked to do for our fundraising event. And it's just a fun, clever song. So. Mm.
So talk, Doug, for a moment about the challenge of casting this show, and in particular, what you needed to look for in certain major roles like Lady of the Lake and King Arthur, and in particular, what it takes to put together that circle of the Knights of the Round Table, and the kind of responsibilities that also get entrusted to the ensemble. It's certainly not the typical chorus in a show.
Well, I think Lady of the Lake... there's two things that Lady of the Lake, and that's what Ashley does so well, is she's got a gorgeous voice, a big, killer, powerful voice, and everybody goes, oh, wow, what a great voice. But it's also comedic, and that's also hard, because some people like to stand alone and sing pretty songs and not act the song. And so Ashley does a really nice job of selling it and having a blast doing it, and there's a number of songs where the audience is just going to laugh because, it's, again, the words are so clever, and it's sung well. So that's fun. And the guys, you know, Arthur has to be fun. He's got to sing. He's got to do a little dancing. He's got to be charming. He's got to do comedy. It's not a big dramatic role. Dan has done dramatic roles in the past, maybe, but not this isn't one of them. Look good in the suit and sing and just be oblivious to a bunch of things, and Dan does that particularly well. The cast has to play multiple roles, and that was kind of fun to do. I think the cast is having fun. You go from, you know, a knight to somebody who is dead and singing a song about being dead. There's a Spamalot a la Vegas number that people have to do. They have to tap dance. So there's a lot of different things that the ensemble has to do, and that's actually the biggest challenge. The knights actually have an easy deal. They get on stage, they wear their knight costumes, and they go in and out, and the ensemble is running backstage, doing all these quick changes, and we've got an amazing crew that's backstage helping all the costume changes. But for a cast of 22, there's way over 100 costumes, and some of those costume changes are lightning fast. So a lot of guys that have to sing. But I think the thing that I hope people will like is just that everybody's having a blast. It's a tongue-in-cheek play. We talk to the audience. We pull the audience out. We go into the audience. We get them to clap along. It's really something, a nice bond between the audience and the cast and trying to get everybody to sing. The whole finale, we're trying to get the audience to sing along with us. Mm-hmm. So you just got to have fun. I think that's when you come to the show, you just have to be willing to have a blast. Mm-hmm.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Doug Instanis from the Racine Theater Guild and two of the lead actors in their production of Spamalot, which is opening this weekend. Dan Martino, who is King Arthur, and Ashley Mulder, who is the Lady of the Lake. Dan, what is your take on the character of King Arthur, and what are you finding maybe especially fun and maybe especially challenging about this particular role?
The most challenging thing is that King Arthur as a character is so very well known from so many different mediums, from, you know, hundreds of years ago to the 1982 movie Excalibur, which was very serious and did have the Lady of the Lake, but a very small. She gives him the sword, which is the impetus for Ashley's role in this show. But also the Monty Python version with Graham Chapman as King Arthur, who he played it very straight. He was the straight man of the show. Everybody else was funny. King Arthur was funny because he didn't get it. And there's so many different takes on King Arthur himself. Maintaining my calm where everything around me is funny has been extremely difficult. The first few rehearsals, it was very difficult to keep a straight face when all of this hilarity is happening around you, which has probably been one of the biggest challenges for me besides the dancing, which is always a challenge for me. but it has been just so fun to be with the people that are around me who know the story that we are telling so well. And we still make each other laugh. Even 8 weeks into the show, we are still making each other laugh, which we're not getting the giggles anymore on stage, but we still have smiles because something new happens every day. Even though it's the same script every night, it's something new is happening with a characterization almost every time we run it, which makes it so much fun and so challenging.
And that's likely to translate to the audience, I should think. Cool. Ashley, what about the Lady of the Lake? Tell us about her as a character. What's fun about playing her?
The interesting thing about the Lady of the Lake is she does not speak a word until almost the end of Act 2. So she really just shows up and sings a song and then goes about her day. But she is there the whole time to kind of drive the process along for Arthur. She gives him the sword. She makes him king. When he gets to Camelot with the big Vegas number, she's there to welcome him. When they're sent to find the Holy Grail, she sends the knights on their way and kind of shows them how to, I don't know, do their quest. So I guess the challenge for me with Lady of the Lake is establishing a character without any lines to say. That's the challenge, but it's a lot of fun.
So I suppose it has a lot to do with how you carry yourself and the way you sing these songs.
Yeah, the songs are all very different in style, so kind of adapting to the different styles of each song. The costumes help a ton in establishing the character, too. Those are really fun to wear and help a lot.
Cool. Doug Instinis, you've already made mention of an amazing crew, which is making a big difference. And both cast members here nodding their heads vociferously in agreement. Help our listeners understand what makes this show technically such a huge undertaking, and why the crew is maybe even a more critical element than they might be in a more typical show.
Well, I think the hard part of this show is it's very stylized. Everybody understands realism when they see it and can understand if that's good or bad. When you do something that's very stylized, we make jokes about things. Somebody comes in with a flat and it looks like a bunny hill. Somebody comes in with a block and it's a rock. And so the crew becomes very important in all the gags that we're doing. A table to dance on becomes a crap table. We need a buggy for a joke. We need hay for a joke. We need hats to do a bottle dance for a joke. Because the show is so witty and there's so many comedic lines, they've added props and costumes or some physical thing to emphasize the witty words. And so there's one joke after another joke after. They do the shield routine where all the shields are messed up and they say Camelot and they say camel toe and they say other things. And, you know, there's a fight sequence where people are chasing with cows and people are, you know, can-can girls are coming in and going out. And so all of these little bits, all of the props, all of the costumes are needed for these specific jokes that are in the play. So that, and, you know, in Broadway, they spend thousands of dollars on a little cup. You know, we can't do that here. But it's very, again, because it's so clever, it's a very demanding show on the costume people and the props people and all the lighting effects. There's thunder and lightning and swamp people and, fight sequences where we need musical underscoring of things. So, as I said time and time to the cast, I'm not worried about you. You guys are doing a great job. It's just all of these technical elements, putting them together is the final touch that will really reinforce what the actors are doing on stage. Hmm.
Speaking of the actors, we touched on this already, the fact that a lot of them, like Dan, for instance, and he's not the only one, came into this thoroughly knowing this show in a way that's probably also pretty exceptional. That the typical show you do, I mean, in many cases, nobody knows it very well at all, or maybe some of them might kind of know it, but there are a lot of people in this cast who knew this show better than you and I did.
Sure.
at the outset. Is that entirely positive, or is that ever a problem where they know it a certain way, or know it in ways that might not necessarily work in this production? Or
I think in this show is probably helpful because the expectation is this, because it's so stylized and so silly. It would be like doing Sound of Music in Argentina with a Latin feel. People expect Sound of Music to be a certain way. People expect Chorus Line to be a certain way. People expect Fiddler on the Roof to be a certain way. People expect Spamalot to be a certain way. So to a certain degree, that is helpful. It was certainly helpful because I didn't have to explain anything to the cast. They all knew the jokes. They all knew what was expected of them. And they were also very helpful in finding cheap versions of telling the jokes without having to have a $10,000 lift we could find other solutions. So in this situation, I don't think it was a problem. I think it was actually very helpful because the expectation when you see Spamalot is this. Mm. And when you mess around with it too much, you're messing with a holy grail.
Right.
You're messing with something that is very important to some people.
To a lot of people. Yeah. So, yeah. So you, in a sense, you do it as truly as you can.
Yeah, right.
You don't try to find your own little unique spin.
Right.
The show's unique enough.
Right.
We should probably at least touch on the fact that some of the humor in this show is
adult
humor, or a bit racy or risque. There's a little bit of dirty language and so on. First of all, have you decided to tone any of that down? Is that a tricky process of trying to decide what needs to stay and what needs to go?
I think we changed a few words here and there, but it's written the way it's written, and the songs are written a certain way, and it's hard to change them. They do give you some information in the script that if high schools and things, if you wanted to change this, but we didn't change too much. We're just warning people that some of it has some adult content, but nothing that you haven't seen on TV 100 times. There's some swearing. There's a number of gay references and jokes and songs, but I think in the scope of life, it's good-natured humor, and it's not. I don't think it's going to offend too many people. If you're coming to Spamalot, hopefully you know what you're coming to see.
Right, right. How do you warn people, by the way? I mean, will there be a sign in the lobby, or is it more pre-production publicity that mentions this?
Yes, we in the press releases, in the articles, we tell the story. Also, a very important thing, when somebody calls to the box office, says, I need 2 adults and 1 child ticket. Well, then you say, okay, just so you know, how young is the child? and this is the type of things that are said. And then we let people make their own judgments.
So is this a show you've ever seen live on stage, since it's done so little at the community theater level?
No, I haven't seen it on stage. I've seen video outtakes on YouTube, but I haven't seen it live.
Mm. So this is from the ground up, then?
I tried to get tickets in New York to see it numerous times, and it was sold out, and then I didn't get to see the tour in Chicago either, so I missed out.
Huh. So I want to ask our two actors what your own favorite moments are from this show. And it doesn't have to necessarily be what you yourself sing. It might be something that somebody else sings or does or whatever. But what would be a couple favorite moments?
The most thoroughly enjoyable thing to watch for me is grown men dancing and having all of the fun. So for me, my favorite song is His Name is Lancelot. I'm not going to give anything away other than to say...
It's Go Cabana Boys.
Yeah, it is all kinds of fun. There are maracas and a lot of sequence, and it's very fun to watch.
Cool. I quite agree.
Mine are mostly the interactions between the characters in the different scenes, like when Lancelot and Robin meet for the first time, because the script is almost word for word right from the movie. Mm. Like you had alluded to before, people come to the show kind of knowing, and they know the jokes are coming, yet they're still going to laugh because the jokes are funny. And watching, we had discussed this, the male cast members in the, as we were talking, that doing this after watching the movie and watching as much of this as we have for 10, 20 years, and now we're actually doing it, it's amazing. I'm doing a scene that Graham Chapman did. I'm doing a scene that John Cleese did. I'm doing a scene that Eric Idle did. And just watching everybody. Prince Herbert is probably my favorite character in the entire show. And Eric Welch, who's playing it in this production, is doing an incredible job. I mean, I at that point in the show, I'm not able to watch him because I'm in a part of the theater where I can't see the stage waiting for my next scene. But I watched it up until I couldn't anymore. Mm. And I'm going to miss it almost every night just because it is so fun to watch. Yeah.
I suppose this would be a little bit like... somehow being able to act in your favorite I Love Lucy episode, mm-hmm, some exactly. I Love Lucy episode that you have watched for 20 or 30 years of your life, and suddenly it's you up there being Desi.
Exactly.
It would be more like a Carol Burnett sketch, though, where they start cracking up and looking Tim at Conley, the audience Harvey and everybody has heard upstage.
The dentist scene.
There you go. So, Doug, we're recording this Tuesday night, and as you said, this show's a lot of fun, but technically speaking, kind of a nightmare. So are things coming together?
They are. Every day we say, I'm not dead yet. It's I'm getting a little better, as everybody keeps saying. So we're adding more costumes, more lights. Like I said, the cast is ready to go. We just keep throwing stuff at them day by day, and we'll be ready for our opening on Friday.
Correct. So remind our listeners of when the performances are, how long Spamalot runs, and what people should do if they want tickets.
We open May 15th, and we run through the 31st. Mostly we play on weekends, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but we do have a Thursday performance on the 28th. And call the box office at 262-633-4218 to order tickets, or you can order online, or you can stop by. We have many ways of taking your money. So, but best to get your tickets early, because hopefully once the word gets out and opening weekend, it'll start selling really well.
So this is the finale, then, of this current season. It's been a lively one, hasn't it?
It is. What a way to go out.
Mm. Doug Instanis, Managing Artistic Director of the Racine Theater Guild, and Dan Martino and Ashley Mulder, the King Arthur and the Lady of the Lake in this production. Best wishes to all of you, and thank you for joining me today on The Morning Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's a little more of Spamalot.
Everybody, always look on the bright side of life.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. And as they like to say on Monty Python, and now for something completely different.
Those are the voices of two seniors at Carthage College, tenor Nick Huff and baritone Mike Anderley. Normally the best of friends, but not sounding or looking very friendly in that really dramatic moment from Giacomo Puccini's one-act Verismo opera, Il Tabarro, The Cloak. Il Tabarro is going to be performed this weekend at Carthage College as part of Carthage's Spring Opera Workshop. A performance which is also going to include one act each from Puccini's La Boheme and Leoncavallo's La Boheme. So it will be a real feast of Italian opera and opera out of the Romantic era of music. And it's really rather uncommon, especially at a place like Carthage, for this kind of repertoire to be done. So it's a really exciting undertaking that people are welcome to come experience for themselves. Friday night and Saturday night at Carthage's Siebert Chapel, 7:30 p.m. The performances are absolutely free and open to the public. And I am sitting here in the choir room of Carthage College with the two gentlemen whose voices you just heard, Nick Huff and Mike Anderley. Gentlemen, we welcome both of you to The Morning Show.
All right, Greg. Thank you for having us.
Good to be talking to both of you about this exciting undertaking. Both of you have sung a lot of opera at Carthage, but this is rather different from the operas in which you have appeared up until now. Why don't you talk for a moment, first of all, about what makes this an especially challenging undertaking compared to some of the other things you've done until now?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, this is our fourth spring opera here at Carthage. We both started as freshmen in Marriage of Figaro. Mm-hmm. Then we decided to do Cozy last year. And one of our major operas last year happened to be Johnny Schicchi, which is the third and final part of Il Tridico by Puccini. And there's a real contrast between the comedic aspects of Johnny Schicchi and just how great it is compared to the drama of Il Tabarro. And so Nick and I have been really challenged. We both had to really beef up our acting. Both of us in class are the class clowns usually. So it's a very interesting dynamic to have us both be very serious and me at the end to murder Nick. So and that's kind of fun, but... Yeah, it's very exciting to perform on stage, and I think it'll be very exciting for the audience as well.
Cool.
And different music, too. The comedies have a certain lightness in their music. This is just all the time, it's different kinds of textures and things, and Puccini weaves a very intricate net of music, which we come right on top of and just crush, we just, with all this loud and intense singing, it's different, but fun also.
Cool. Yeah, and you're right that nothing you've done at Carthage until now, with maybe the exception of individual little arias or something, neither of you have ever been in a full-blown tragic dramatic opera. They've all been comedies, which is usually the way it works. So this represents something of quite a exciting exploration. Another thing that's different about this compared to most of the operas that you've been in is this is a full-length opera being done in its original language. Mm-hmm. Talk about that challenge.
Well, for a number of, I should say a couple of years, Mike and I have wanted to do a work in its original language. And so we're both pretty comfortable with Italian and German and to some extent French too. And we thought, well, we could do something. Maybe we thought about a Mozart opera in German or something. And eventually the idea came up to do this opera in Italian because Mike was saying earlier, it's also from Il Tridico, so we'll have two of the three operas in the company repertoire by the time we leave, and so we'll both have it's a valuable experience. And Italian is a pretty a language that is pretty musical and pretty. The rules are straightforward, so it's something that's accessible, not easy necessarily, but accessible for different age levels. So we have Mike and I are seniors, but we also have some sophomores and even freshmen in this show. And they're singing in Italian, so we thought it was, our resumes all say, English, Macaronic, which means multiple languages, these kind of things, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's very usual, but we all were looking and thinking, wouldn't it be neat? Wouldn't it be cool? And so we finally did enough convincing, I think, and we got the go-ahead to do this in Italian, and that's not super typical for the kind of work that you do at our level in our education, and it's really cool that we've been trusted to do this and that it's going off so well so far.
Has it been harder to learn and or memorize?
Oh, I would say absolutely. Yeah. It's provided quite the challenge for all of us, freshmen and seniors alike, because this is the first work we've learned in its entirety in its original language. You really have to understand what you're saying in both languages, so... Mm-hmm. You have to translate from the English that you read on the page. You have to put that in your mind as well as the Italian that's coming out of your mouth. And then to act that is just definitely quite the challenge to really attain.
Yeah, acting in another language is really tough. Mm.
This is part of course, what could be called a double bill in which this one-act opera by Il Tabarro is paired with one act each from La Bohème, one act from the most famous La Bohème by Puccini, the same composer, and then an act from another operatic setting of La Bohème by Ruggero Leoncavallo. Two settings of La Bohème composed almost simultaneously, and obviously the Puccini La Bohème has wiped the other one off the map. I suppose you guys have listened in enough to the rehearsals of the other two works to have some idea of how different Puccini mm-hmm. is as a composer mm-hmm. between 1896 La Boheme and 1918, which is Il Tabarro, and how modern this music becomes by the time we're at that point in his career. What makes it musically challenging?
I think there are some, Puccini is a romantic composer. He's largely called romantic, but by the end of his career, that's our show, you see a very different texture sometimes, and he does it for dramatic purposes. So he is part of a group of operatic Italian composers who began to see, Verdi famously said voce, 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 but Verdi was also a very theatrical composer. Puccini comes after him, and we start to see that the drama is given, I would say, at least as much importance as the music, and that he makes them equal partners, which is really neat. For instance, you start to see all kinds of musical textures that wouldn't exist in a lot of romantic stuff. There's very impressionist moments in the, here piano, we're doing it with piano, but in the orchestra, all kinds of stuff that break the rules of standard, even expanded tonality, which is what, the normal tonal system you're used to hearing on the radio. And it doesn't sound, bad or weird or avant-garde or anything. It just fits the dramatic purpose really perfectly. And Puccini, this is how you can tell he's a master. He just, by the time he gets to the end of his career, he was just able to whip out an opera, too. I mean, he really could compose quickly. And it's this level, that kind of thing. I have a chromatic scale in my aria. It's really tough to, tough to do, but it fits. And so it's a great, only one of many examples of how it changes from La Boheme, which you'll hear some of, which is more standard, slightly expanded tonality romanticism, to late romantic, nearly impressionist music.
Right. Yeah, we step away from the famous, gorgeous melodies, tunes in La Boheme to an opera score that has some beautiful, striking melodies, but it doesn't have many tunes, and instead this is music that's strikingly sophisticated, and that throws quite a challenge at all of you who are singing it. Because it's in Italian, Mike, of course, one of the things that's going to be offered up to the audience will be the use of supertitles, projected supertitles, which people are used to seeing in opera houses, but it's the first time that's ever been done here at Carthage, at least with an opera performance. So just say a word about the challenge of putting that together, because you're one of the people, since you were so hot to trot about singing
certainly,
this in Italian,
certainly.
You're one of them that is working hard to put those super titles together.
Absolutely. Nick and I have been working really hard, been looking at a lot of different sources, things that are in our score that the English isn't a perfect translation, but we've also referenced the Metropolitan Opera's work of Il Tabarro and looked at some of their super titles and tried to, because we're setting this production in a more modern format, we're going to have a little bit more modern language that where usually the Met or any other opera house will usually set it early in the, early 20th century, early 1900s. We will try to make some of the language a little bit more modern.
So you've been busy typing it in. I mean,
typing
like
it in. We put together a PowerPoint, and we'll need someone to, make sure they follow the score really well, and make sure that they get the lines, synced up to what we're singing. Mm. And that's another challenge of the of the other language. Mm.
Nick, speaking of challenges, one of the interesting challenges you undertook this semester is not only this big role of Luigi in Il Tabarro, but right before it, the title role in Man of La Mancha for Carthage's main stage musical. Just say a word about the interesting experience and challenge of undertaking two things of such size in the same semester and of moving from one style to another. How hard has that been?
It's been kind of challenging, but also really cool to do at the same time because, for one thing, Man of La Mancha, Don Quixote, is a character who is full of hope and full of life, and he only wants to make the world better. In fact, one of his lines is, I just want to make the world a better place, basically. Whereas Il Tabarro, being a Verismo opera, is full of angst and full of anger. It's full of a lot of I mean, my whole aria is about how, I mean, it almost, without applying retroactively any labels to Puccini or his work, it's almost, you know, communist. He's talking about how the poor people have nothing, they get stepped on all the time, and they deserve better. And so it's a show of struggle and of, it's very romantic in the sense that they're striving, but they're not going to get anywhere. So they're dramatically really different. Luigi doesn't mind cheating with his boss's wife. Don Quixote would never, ever even dream of that. He doesn't even look at the girl he loves when he first sees her. Philosophically and in terms of their morals, they're incredibly different people. The singing is also really different. Don Quixote is a baritone role, and I'm a tenor, so that was a challenge to learn how to sing low enough to do the role justice. It's not super low, so it wasn't such a stretch from the beginning, but singing in that part of my range for so long, they rehearsed 6 to 10 every night for the last month or so before that show opened, that's a lot of singing baritone stuff. So then to move over here and jump back, I have a high note in my aria. It's a B flat, and that's high. So to switch gears like that, and it's been, you know, a week and a half now, that's a challenge. That's a technical challenge. But it's part of what I was excited to do in the first place, because I want one day when I'm big enough, I'd like to do very dramatic repertoire. I'm really attracted to it. And that requires lows and highs, and I want to be able to do them in simultaneity. And this has been a very, very good experience, both in my acting classes. I've been writing my journals all about how different they are and how it's different to access different parts of yourself to bring honesty to the characters. Very different, but incredibly informative. This has been a very good semester with these two roles for me.
And Mike, say a word about the challenge of portraying a character like Michel. We should maybe say a word about who he is.
Absolutely.
And why he is the way he is, and how that's very different from who you are, and what kind of challenge that's been for you.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Michel, he's a barge captain, and he's, you know, 50, 55, and he's married to this young girl half his age. She's about 20, 25, and, you know, so they've lost their baby in the past year. And so, you know, as a couple grows apart, this couple's grown apart from that. And Michel, you know, he's hurting, clearly. He's hurting. And, you know, the show opens, and she comes onto the stage, and Michel's just sitting there pensively. And you can tell, you know, the entire opera, there's this question of, you know, does Michel know that she's cheating on him, or does he not understand? And at some point, you have to, and an actor, I've had to find that point in the opera for myself and say, this is exactly where he knows. And, you know, then you have to portray that. And then your physicality becomes a lot different. You start acting very cold towards one another. So it's been very rough. I played Johnny Skeegee last year, and that was a really fun role. And I've been always more of a, you know, fun, hyper kind of guy. So it's really tough for me to get to that dark side and, you know, think about, oh, strangling someone on stage. So it's been very challenging, but I've loved every second of it. It's definitely worth the challenge.
You're doing a good job, too.
So the one-act Verismo opera, Il Tabarro, The Cloak, is part of this double bill this weekend at Carthage College. Mike Anderle and Nick Huff are two of the members of the cast. Mary Catherine Bach, who is from Racine, is the soprano singing the role of Georgette. In the two La Bohèmes, the cast includes the Rodolfo in the Puccini La Bohème, a young man from Kenosha, Max Dinan, who is another senior, so a classmate of Mike and Nick. And then one act from Leoncavallo's La Bohème, which is an extremely seldom heard rarity. And so the final act of La Bohème is actually going to come from this rarity. And it's a masterpiece in its own right, unjustly neglected. So these performances, again, are Friday night and Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. in Carthage's Siebert Chapel. Admission is free, and the public is welcome to come and enjoy what promises to be a feast of Italian opera. And Mike Anderle and Nick Huff, I appreciate both of you joining us. Since you're seniors, just say a quick word about where you are off to next year. Mike?
Yeah, I will be student teaching in the Kenosha Unified School District, and from there I will be trying to find a job.
As a
history teacher.
All right. And Nick?
I will be at graduate school at the University of Rochester, the Eastman School of Music, for opera.
Very good. My thanks to both of you for joining me today on The Morning Show.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
It's 8:58 here on WGTD HD. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, it is the monthly visit of the United Environmental Council. And tomorrow, Nan Calvert will bring with her Reverend David Rhodes, who's going to be talking about the phenomenon of green congregations, congregations who make the choice to be committed collectively to environmental causes. And we'll hear about a program called Greening Greater Racine. On Friday, Art Sear, a professor from Carthage College, pays his monthly visit to the program to offer analysis of current events. On Monday's program, David Curdian, author who is going to be a special guest of the Racine Historical Society next week. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, wgtd.org. Click on Talk. Support for WGTD's Morning Show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenoshans who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional Morning Show co-host. Today is going to be sunny but brisk, a high of 56 degrees inland, a little bit cooler near the lake. Clear and cool tonight with some patchy frost, a low of 39 degrees. Tomorrow, Thursday, will be mostly cloudy. A slight chance of afternoon rain. We will warm to 63. On Friday, cloudy but warmer, a 40% chance of rain on Friday, will be a high of 73 on Friday, a high of 75 degrees on both Saturday and Sunday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.